So we have just a little bit more to go through, and then the class will conclude. So back one phrase, Murshid may act a certain way, which would have an effect at that moment and has nothing to do afterwards. To one, he may offer a sweet syrup. To the other, salt water. To one, hard nuts to crack under the teeth. To the other, soft sweets. And for each action, he has his own reasons, for he knows what is best for his murid. This is a challenge, especially if murids start comparing notes. Or observing, like, why are they treating them that way and they treat me? You see how it's, again, very subtle, and we have to look within to see how we're reacting to it and what emotions could be arising. And can we have an equanimity and trust that that teacher is giving to one what that one needs and the other what the other one needs? I think it's a real challenge. I think these teachings, I think this path is hard for Westerners, really. We're drawn to it because it's mystical, and at the same time, we really resist it because we're so independent, you know? It's, don't you think? I mean, really, if we're not, it's cultural. It's something so cultural about it, too, and we're not in that culture, really.
That's what Pure Murshid Anarkhan says.
Yeah.
It's difficult for a Westerner to be a disciple or a student.
Yeah.
Because we're really taught about the self, mm-hmm. being, you know,
right.
us, me, kind of me first type of thing. And it's a self-surrender.
It is.
It's not unlike what goes on with the mindfulness education.
Yes.
Yeah. Where you're stopping and breathing.
Yes.
And counting.
Yes.
And waiting. Without, mm-hmm. Associating and responding.
Yeah. I think the counting's an interesting thing, too, because it's counter to what we want to be doing. You know, it's a discipline. It's a kind of discipline, and we want to be, I think especially it's true, and it's becoming a worldwide phenomenon now, we want to be entertained somehow. Mm-hmm. So to be disciplined and just counting, it's boring, when is this going to be over, I don't like this, do you know what I mean? It's really true, and when do we get to eat, or, you know, I don't know, whatever the mind goes through, right? I wonder what kind of tea we're going to have, or, you know, I mean, this is in retreat, we do that, you know, and I thought Pure Vilayat was really good, because you know what, you got a plate of salad and bread, that's it, you didn't get much else. It was like, don't even be thinking about what's coming, because you know what's coming. It's going to be salad and bread. And then in the morning, it's going to be oatmeal. And at dinner, it's not going to be much unless it's, again, salad and bread. So you didn't have to think too much about it. You know, but people do, they get focused on all kinds of crazy things.
You didn't complain about it too much either.
No, no one complained about it at all, ever. We didn't have forms to fill out about how we liked the food. Like, you like it, you eat it, you don't, you're fasting, you know? It's kind of like that. But he also was very, because we were in retreat and we were in training, it was about subduing those pleasures, really, in a lot of ways. And Joe can say, I mean, you know, he does those 10-day Vipassana retreats, and the advanced students, what you get for being advanced is you don't get anything after 12 o'clock. You better eat in the morning because that's all you're getting. You might get a little tea to wet your palate, but you don't get any milk in that or sugar in that tea. So, you know, so it's really a matter of controlling those, you know, those impulses or those appetites in a very literal way.
Maria?
Yes.
You told me that you were going to do that fast. Do you want to say anything about that? I didn't even ask you about that.
I did it.
Appropriate. It was, you said you did it for 36 hours or something?
Something like that. Murshida Vira, when I was under her guidance, she asked me to fast one day a week. And I did it for many, many years. It's so good. It's actually very freeing when you just stop thinking about food for a day. But also what happens is the mind can let go of the idea of hunger. And for me, I always did it on a day when I could be, you know, more quiet and maybe even alone. But it can be when the body isn't processing in that way, it allows everything to become lighter. And for me, it's very uplifting. And so both Sess and I had these little procedures, which a lot of us have to go through, and you have to fast for it. And I thought, well, this feels really, I mean, it reminded me of what it felt like before. And, you know, Murshida Vira's reminder was, when you're feeling hungry, just pray. You know, it helps you be, and it helps us be mindful of all the people in the world who can't go to the refrigerator and just grab food, that are hungry. I mean, it does a lot of things for us. And so after, you know, we went through that a few weeks ago, I thought, I'm going to do this again. And Murshida always said, you can have juice, but don't have anything really heavy, no heavy juices. And it's just kind of like you would do when you're doing a fast with clear fluids and popsicles too. But they're cooling for me because I always have a lot of heat in my body, so the popsicle is just a cooling thing to have. But, you know, it's a clear liquid in a solid form. But you might try it, even if it's 12 hours, just see, you know, and if you're okay with it in terms of health, some people have to have a certain amount of food throughout the day, but it's a very interesting an uplifting experience. Have you all fasted before? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Karunji was into that too. Mm. One day a week. Don't you fast one day a week?
Yeah, I think it's good for the body. It kind of clears everything out. So.
But, you know, the concept of having tea or jello,
mm-hmm.
or even
juice.
Broth, vegetable broth. Things like that.
Yeah.
It's not just totally refreshing.
No, liquids are very, very mm-hmm. good. But, and I think I've told some of you this, when I was, you know, I had the wonderful opportunity to meet Mother Teresa and do a little work with her in Calcutta, but one of the other people that we met, she was a, and I'm trying to remember what ashram she was at. She was in Calcutta also. But she was basically a breatharian. And she didn't eat. They would beg her to drink a little bit of the broth from boiled rice. That's about it that she took as nourishment. I don't think she even drank milk or anything. But I'm telling you, she was very subtle in her manner, but very strong and very present. But it's almost as if she wasn't solid. It's almost like you could see through her. I mean, it was a very interesting phenomena, and it was as if also she never really was still. Even when she was standing still, it just, and maybe it was to my perception, but it always seemed like, you know, she was so open that you could almost see through her, and you could see her kind of the subtle motion in her constantly. It was a very interesting experience to meet someone that had been that long without, you know, food.
Truly, it raises above the denseness of the
earth. Yeah. And she was running this big ashram.
So she was grounded in
it. Yeah, absolutely. You know, it was beautiful. Inspiring. So much can be drawn through the breath. And the breath can also filter so much when we want it to. We can use it to expel all kinds of things, both gross and subtle, from our consciousness and from our body. Just a little bit more. He may try, again, the Murshid may try the patience of one, and he may regard the impatience of the other. He may answer one in words, and his answer to the other may be in silence. Have you ever had anyone do that to you? Just look at you. You've asked them a question and they just look at you, and you know. He may tell you, you do this. And he may tell the other, will you choose what you will do? He may seem, okay, you go away. There's something on my, I don't want it to, doesn't want to go away. Okay. He may seem strict to one student and to the other not in the least. The other one would never imagine for one moment that Murshid could be strict. Unless, of course, they're comparing notes. You know, people tend to do that. I mean, I think within our circle, it's nice if people share what their experiences are, how it's affecting their lives. That was always what Murshida Vera wanted me to do. She would give me a practice, and I'd have to then, after 1 month, write to her what my experience was. But it was always not, oh, I'm seeing angels or hearing whatever. It was, no, what is happening in your life? How do you see evidence of that practice in your life? How's it changing your life? That's the most important thing. This isn't a path that is irrelevant. It's very relevant. It's how's it working in and through your life? So she always would make me be, it made me very mindful to watch the nature of things and the subtlety, how things would be changing and evolving. And really, of course, it was me changing and evolving. Things externally seemed different, you know? And it was just me, you know? It's all, guess what? This is, it really is all about you, okay? Does that feel good?
When it should be.
When it should be, yes. And in other times it's, you know, the theme for spring camp is let my heart reflect thy light. Let my heart reflect thy light. It's a phrase by an icon. And it's like that, you know, are we reflective? You know, are we able to absorb something from the atmosphere? To the one, he would say plainly, you've done wrong. And to the other, he will say, I do not approve of it. And to the third, he will say, have you done so? It's done. And the fourth, the same thing that one has done, Murshid will say nothing. Last paragraph. Murids who are not aware of it will feel revolt, will feel discomfort, would feel impatience, would feel troubled in their hearts. And Murids who see one Murid treated in one manner and the other in another manner would wonder and would be amazed. Now keep in mind, he's giving this teaching to those people that were closest to him. That he even had to say these words is something. And that these words are important even now. You know, I've had people that have done things like this. Called to me. I think this is disrespectful of anyone. I'm trying to teach people something in a manner of being with another human being or even an animal, you know, they'll yell, hey, hay, you know, I've turned around and said to them, hay is something you give to a horse to eat. You don't call me hay. That's just so, you know, there's a rudeness to that, or a casualness that, again, isn't really part of the tradition. And it's not, I mean, I was raised in a very formal kind of way, you know, more old world we were. And I feel that those kinds of casual ways of being with people are so impolite. But not only that, they reflect the background of that individual. It reveals so much. But at the same moment, I feel I need to say something, because I don't want that person that studied with me to do that to another person. You know, I want to stop that.
It's like bringing out the nobility of the soul.
It's true.
Through the human form.
Yes.
But sometimes maybe in this area, a little casual isn't what goes on, because it's kind of an in thing, you know, to be a little casual.
In the deep south, hey is just a way to say hello.
Yeah. Well, this person wasn't from the deep south. And they were yelling, you know, hey. So anyway, I'm just saying, be mindful. You know, there was I see this all the time, for example, at our camps, especially in the summer when it is so hot. And someone has been visiting us. Maybe this climate isn't a climate they're even accustomed to. We're all hot. And what do? The minute the class is over, we go over and we grab our big old bottles of water and we start drinking. What happens to the guest? Everyone rushes them and wants to talk to them. And maybe they then have another thing they have to get to themselves. Does anyone think to pick up a glass of water and offer it to them? This is what I'm saying. This kind of politeness, this thoughtfulness of another person instead of myself, that maybe I have to run to the restroom or I need water. What about that person that just gave us an hour of talking to them? And we don't think of that. This is what I'm saying. Or someone comes in and, you know, again, I'm talking, all of us can be this way to each other, but especially when we have guests that come here, you know, we're all sitting around, we're all settled in, you know. And the other thing, I was telling Joe this the other day, I don't know where we were. It's like, why do people think chairs are for their backpacks? Put your backpack somewhere else. You know, you walk in, there's not even a seat because it's all coats and, you know, people kicking their shoes off and they're all, you know, and I'm like, okay, who picks up after you at home is kind of what I'm thinking. But then someone walks in, you can see they're looking for a seat. Does anyone think to get up and give them a seat or bring a seat to them? You know, I'm just saying, when we go to camp, pay attention and be nice. Right?
Thoughtful.
Okay. Mere reads who are not aware of it would revolt, would feel discomfort, would feel impatient, would feel troubled in their hearts. Yurites who see one treated in one manner and the other in another manner would wonder and would be amazed. Why must it be so? Are they not equal? Are they not all equal to their Murshid? Oh, another thing. So, you know, that when I was getting my training, I'm not saying this for me. You all can do whatever you want to me. But please, when another person comes that's a guest, you know, we never thought also to sit while someone entered the room that was, we were coming for a teaching or to offer. You stand respectfully. We always did that. We didn't just gonna wait for someone to give something to us. I mean, we stood, and I remember Pirvalite would always say, oh, just sit down. And Murshid Hidayat too, oh, don't, you know. He always was very humble that way, and yet he certainly deserved the respect.
Mm-hmm. You always stand up when a Rinpoche enters the room.
Absolutely, or Dalai Lama comes, you know, everybody's waiting and jumps right up, you know. So that whole idea, I mean, there's that whole, that's part of this path. No, it's not a religion, but it is a kind of a code of conduct, of respect, of consideration, of kindness, you know, but no one needs to know this. We all know this. Do unto others as we would have them do unto us.
Well, and you wouldn't even do that professionally.
Right.
You know, if you were sitting at a conference table and somebody comes in to, and you're meeting a new client. Or
absolutely. Stand up. Yeah. Absolutely.
You see old movies from the 40s or such, and a lady enters that comes over to the table. Mm-hmm. All the gentlemen stand up. And I thought of that a lot recently because we just don't do that.
Joe does it.
Joe does it.
I need to learn it in that regard because it's a practice.
We were, Joe and I went away for our honeymoon, kind of really before the formal ceremony. And when we had our little ceremony here, we went away just for the night up to the Elms, and we came back and we were having breakfast. And, you know, Joe still does it. I mean, even if we're at a place real casual, he, you know, when he's in a booth, he always shimmies and gets up when I'm leaving, and when I'm coming back, he still does it. He opens the doors and all of those things. And, there were some women there, and there was a young boy with them, these women. And it was all women, it was like sisters and aunts and things. And they looked at that young boy, and they said, "You see that behavior? You do that, and you'll get yourself a nice lady one of these days." You see what I'm saying? They were trying to teach him. But yes, I just think it's a matter, and when someone, you know, when someone elderly enters the room, or someone, you know, and you're right, at a business meeting, even as a woman, you know, if the president comes in, I stand up and greet him. I usually hug him and kiss him too, but you know what I'm saying? Because I'm just that way, but I just don't sit there and, like, you know.
No, Connie even speaks about that.
Absolutely. I mean, there's that whole bite. Yes.
And then the shaking of the hand and that exchange of energy and, I mean, not to say that I have this, but I maybe oversympathize at times. And I remember one time when Karuna Mayama was at camp. It was cold. Maybe it was spring, but it seemed cold.
Mm-hmm.
Was cold, and she didn't have any socks on. And I think that might have been the time when Rashida Vera, they thought
could have
she
been.
Died. I think they were sitting there together. But I took my shawl and put it under her feet. Because I thought, God, her feet have to be cold, and then covered it up. And then later she came and she said, "All these people, and not one person thought that I'd be cold but you." Mm. It was sweet. It was, I think of that.
But like, but also that was a beautiful teaching moment for you to emphasize that consideration is good and that one should be that way, mm-hmm. always.
Yeah.
She was, yeah.
She's so thoughtful.
She was hard sometimes too, though.
Oh, she was hard on me. You have a Ganesh in you. What about your breath? You don't need your beads. You have your breath. I mean, she would really give it to me. But she loved me.
She love you. Yeah. So, Murites, who see one Murite treated in one manner and another in another manner, would wonder and would be amazed. Why must it be so? Are they not equal? Are they not equal to their Murshid? So you can imagine what was going on, right? Something was happening that he felt compelled he had to give this teaching. Very important to remember that. And then he says, but they do not know. Yes, they are all near to the heart of Murshid in the same way. But the way that Murshid takes with each is like a prescription to that particular person. It is in this way that patience develops in the student. Tolerance is taught to the student. Endurance is given to the student. He is made thoughtful. He's made considerate. He's made tender. Even if it be by grinding his rough feeling, he's made gentle in time. Without him knowing. All these qualities which make the soul noble are drawn out by this finer method of working with Murides. All those qualities which make the soul noble are drawn out by this finer method of working with Murides. And yet very few Murides realize it. very seldom do they realize it is so. Two more sentences. What is asked of students is not to become pious or virtuous or most learned or most powerful. The most easy and the most difficult thing is to be able to understand what Murshid expects of them. It is not what Murshid expects of all of them. No. It is what Murshid expects of that particular murid. And it is from that day that he may, or that she may, be called a murid, a student. It is from that day that he begins advancement in the spiritual path. Oh, I lied. There are a few more sentences. Do you want to hear them?
Absolutely.
Okay. What keeps one back is realizing this. What is expected by Murshid? What keeps one back in realizing this, excuse me, what is expected by Murshid is the lack of keen observation of the attitude and outlook and teaching that Murshid gives. Murshid and Murid apart, however much a person be near and dear to you, if that person does not feel what you expect of him, he's not arrived to be called your friend. Because there is a proof of sympathy, there is a proof of love, there is a proof of oneness, there is the proof of the link. When one begins to feel what is expected. No sooner the heart of a murid begins to realize this, it automatically turns into a cup, and a magic cup that becomes larger and larger, and the light and life as a sacrament is filled in it. And there remains always a place to fill. So being empty, empty, empty. Now this is the fourth point that he talked about at the beginning, but now we're just getting to it. And it really is the end. So point number four. There's another aspect of the finer teaching, but this aspect is Murshid's sacred responsibility towards his murids. And that way is to pray for them, to bless them, and to wish their advancement in all directions of life. And very often, what no practices, no studies, no efforts of any kind can give, the blessing of the teacher, which comes from the bottom of his heart, which comes from the bottom of her heart can give. And Murshid concludes with these words, God bless you. I will say it's one of the hardest things that one can do. And you know this is true whether you're a parent, a teacher, a real estate agent, a therapist, a supervisor, is sometimes you see that one is struggling in life, and for one to remain silent and observe and support that struggle while one learns what they're needing to learn can be one of the most difficult challenges put upon someone in a place of responsibility. And yet one has to do that and sometimes remain silent. And one may consider indifferent in some ways, but it's not. People are being held just the same in the heart. I thought I would close, and then we'll say the Khatum together, but I thought I would read parts of this prayer of peace by Murshid. O thou, the almighty sun, whose light cleareth away all clouds, we take refuge in thee. We pray thee, dispel the mists of illusion from the hearts of the nations, and lift their lives by thy all-sufficient power. Pour upon them thy limitless love, thy ever-shining light, thy everlasting life, thy heavenly joy, and thy perfect peace. Amen. That phrase, thy all-sufficient power, and that's a phrase that we hear again and again in the various phases of the healing service. Thy all-sufficient power. It's a beautiful phrase. You might want to contemplate that phrase. Thy all-sufficient power. I want to thank you all that made the journey to be here and join us, and I want to thank those that are online from afar. And let us close with the prayer katun. O thou, who art the perfection of love, harmony, and beauty, Lord of heaven and earth, open our hearts that we may hear thy voice, which constantly cometh from within. Disclose to us thy divine light, which is hidden in our souls, that we may know and understand life better. Most merciful and compassionate God, give us thy great goodness. Teach us thy loving forgiveness. Raise us above the distinctions and differences which divide men. Send us the peace of thy divine spirit, and unite us all in thy perfect being. Need to do this one thing to save this.